All right, folks, we're going to continue. Our next speaker, we have four remaining in this afternoon. Our next speaker is Dr. Naveen Ramankutty from McGill University. He is an associate professor of geography, and he holds a Canada Research Chair in Land Use and Global Environmental Change. He has a multidisciplinary background, having been trained as an engineer, although he doesn't want to talk about it much. Prior to obtaining graduate degrees, I looked you up, Naveen. Prior to obtaining graduate degrees in climate modeling and the effects of land use on terrestrial ecosystems. His research program is largely focused on the ecological impacts of agriculture. Today he'll be speaking about the future of agriculture in the context of global environmental stressors.
Thanks, Tony. Is this working? Yeah. Nothing like talking about agriculture after lunch. So the context of my research is on this particular dilemma that agriculture today, even with the agriculture we have a billion people malnourished around the planet, and this number is potentially rising. At the same time, I believe that agriculture itself is a global environmental threat, is one of the biggest global environmental threats. If you look at the state of agriculture today, nearly a third of our ice-free land surface is used for agriculture. This is an enormous transformation of the world's land surface. These red colors show places used for grazing, and the greenish colors show places used for cultivation. And we have lost about 20% of our forests because of this big agricultural expansion. If you take a list of global environmental problems, it turns out that agriculture is the biggest driver of biodiversity loss around the planet because of habitat loss. It's responsible for a third of the greenhouse gas emissions, as Damon pointed out. In terms of water use, it's responsible for 70% of the world's water withdrawals. It's also the biggest driver of freshwater eutrophication around the planet. So, if you just take a litany of global environmental problems, agriculture shows up everywhere. This is the context in which I do my work, is trying to look at it globally, and then Tony asked me, a couple of months ago, to talk about agriculture in Canada, and about last week I started thinking about my talk, and I realized I actually don't know a lot about agriculture in Canada. So that's a confession. So I educated myself over the last week, and I hope this will provide, my talk will provide a context for discussion more than anything else. I kind of cringed when I look at the website and I saw the meet our experts list. I was like, I don't really think of myself as an expert on this. What I'm going to talk about is, what does agriculture look like in Canada? How might it be affected by climate change? Some of the issues that Damon pointed out, and what are some potential surprises in this story? So this is what agriculture looks like in Canada. So this is a zoom in of agricultural lands in Canada. We grow most of our crops in the west, in the prairie provinces. We have some agriculture in the Peace River Valley up north. It's one of the northernmost settlements used for agriculture. We also have crops in Quebec and Ontario. Okay, so we are a really cold country. We don't have a lot of places to grow crops. What kinds of crops do we grow? Our biggest crop production is wheat, followed by canola, or rapeseed, as the rest of the world calls it. Canola was a Canadian invention. It's a Canadian oil, canola. We also grow maize, barley, potatoes, and so on, smaller crops. But mainly we grow maize, wheat, canola, and barley.
This is by weight?
By production. So this is where we grow wheat. We grow most of our wheat in the west, the Canadian prairie provinces, right? And we also grow it in the Peace River. We have a little bit of wheat in Ontario as well. We also grow canola, mostly in the west. Most of our maize production is in Quebec and Ontario. And we also grow barley, also mostly in the west. Okay. This is now zooming back and looking at, these are the crops we grow, but what does it look like globally? Well, Canada happens to be one of the biggest producers of wheat on the planet. There's wheat in Canada and parts of the U.S., also in India and China and parts of Europe, in Australia, as well as the Pampas region in Argentina. So Canada is a major wheat producer. In terms of barley, again, we are a major producer of barley. Barley grows in colder climates. Turns out we are either the first or the second largest producer of canola on the planet, or rapeseed. So we grow canola, there's canola in China. China used to be the number one. I think Canada just overtook China in the last year. So now it's really interesting to see how this has changed over the last decade. So this shows six crops, the three largest increases in terms of production and the three largest decreases in production. So it turns out that barley production has decreased by 40%, wheat production has decreased by 13%, and oats by 27%. On the other hand, production increases have happened for soy, maize, and canola or rapeseed. Okay, so it's really interesting to see that although we are a big wheat producer, our wheat production is actually decreasing. On the other hand, canola production is increasing really rapidly. We may want to think about why this is happening. This shows how we use these different crops in Canada. So if you look at wheat and canola, most of it is exported. Okay, nearly three-quarters of our wheat and canola is exported. In terms of wheat, we use about 10% for food, not much in terms of canola. A lot of canola also goes into food manufacturing, goes to make canola oil. But what else is canola used for, or could it be used for? Biodiesel, right? So that might explain why that production has been increasing as well. If you look at maize and barley, most of the maize and barley is going into feeds, going to animal feed. It returns us food, but with very low efficiency. Only about 10% of, as you move up the trophic chain, only about 10% efficiency remains. So most of it goes at feed. In terms of barley, a little bit goes into exports as well. So if you look at the food column here, very little of our production in Canada is actually for food. It's mostly for either for exports or food manufacturing or for feed. And in terms of our economy as well, it turns out that agriculture only accounts for about 2% of the globe, of the GDP in Canada. Okay, so agriculture in Canada is not really for food. It's not for the economy as well. On a large scale, it's still a major economy. Now let's look at water use in Canada. So, when you think about agriculture, we also need to think about what is it doing to the environment. If you look at water use, most of the agriculture in Canada is actually rain-fed. Only about 2% is irrigated. And most of the irrigation happens in the west, where it's drier. Of the total irrigation volume, about 60% of the total water use happens in Alberta, one of the drier provinces, and in BC, the remaining 30% in BC. So now, what does this mean in terms of climate change? So maybe start with the context again, that most of the agriculture is not for food. Most of it is for, it's not really a huge part of our economy either. So with that context, we may want to think about whether climate change is a big deal or not in Canada. Okay, but let's now look at what climate change means for Canada. We'll start with the simple equation of photosynthesis. If you think about your basic biology, plants fix carbon dioxide. They use energy from light. They need water. They form carbohydrates, the lunch that we just ate, and they release oxygen. The performance of enzymes, so the enzymes catalyze reaction, the performance of enzymes is determined by temperature. So you have warmer temperatures, you know, enzymes may do better, but beyond a certain temperature, that might enzymes may denature as well. So carbon dioxide, the impact of carbon dioxide in plants is really clear. If you have more CO2, plants do better. This is just an image showing that at 1,200 parts per million, you know, your plant is much bigger. This is why we use CO2 in greenhouses as well. There are experiments around the planet called the FACE experiments, free air carbon dioxide exchange experiments, where people in real ecosystems, people plant these huge pots and they infuse carbon dioxide into the plants. So it's not in a pot or it's not in a chamber, it's outdoors. So these experiments, or FACE experiments, have also been conducted now for several crops. And so this shows, so this is for increasing CO2 from 360 parts per million to something like 580 parts per million, a rough doubling of CO2. This shows how yields have increased for rice, wheat, cotton, and sorghum. So yields generally with increased carbon dioxide, yields for rice and wheat increased by about 10% or so. Cotton shows the biggest increase. Sorghum shows very little increase. Okay, so different crops have different increases, but generally speaking, plants will benefit from CO2 increases. In terms of water, so you talked about how plants need CO2. In terms of water, well, the the amount of water that plants need will come from soil moisture, right? So that's where plants take their water from. So it depends on a balance between what between rainfall and evapotranspiration, how much water is being evaporated or transpired by plants. With climate change, what's likely to happen is that evapotranspiration, which is a function of temperature, will likely increase. So warming will likely increase that factor. Precipitation may either go up or go down. Damon showed that, you know, in general, precipitation may go up, but in the summer, maybe it will decrease. But in general, it means that soil moisture is likely to decrease as a balance between these two things. How this actually happens, it's very hard to figure out in your heads, but we have climate models that can actually simulate these things. So here we have an animation from the Canadian climate model going into the year 2000. It's a projection into the future of soil moisture, and the reddish colors show decreases in soil moisture over time. And you can see that, you know, year by year it sometimes goes up, sometimes goes down, but mostly it seems to be a decrease, especially in the West, places where we have most of our agriculture. So this is for a scenario where a business as usual scenario from the West, so it's about a 1% increase in CO2. Okay, so what about temperature? How do plants respond to temperature? This is relatively well known that in general, plants have an optimum temperature requirement, and if temperatures are too cold, they don't do so well. If temperatures are too warm, they don't do so well. It's because of the enzyme, how the enzymes perform. They also have a reproductive response, which means that beyond a certain temperature, they won't reproduce. Okay, so this is an example for corn. This is the optimum range in terms of reproduction. This is the optimum vegetative response. The other response that plants or crops may have in terms of temperature is that they can potentially grow in different places. So this is an analysis that I did a long time ago. It's about 10 years old now. But the message hasn't changed since then. That is that places that are currently too cold for agriculture may actually benefit from climate change. As things get warmer, we may have longer growing seasons. Places that are cold may have increased productivity. So this shows that, you know, parts of Canada and Russia will actually increase in terms of suitability, while other parts of the world may actually decrease in terms of land suitability. Of course, whether this increased suitability will actually take place, will actually be taken advantage of, depends on what we do with the soils and so on and so forth. Okay. Yeah?
The suitability just takes into account temperature and not the other factors you already mentioned.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's just a simple climatic constraint. So we look at the climatic constraint on agriculture and see how that shifts. So people always say that we can't actually take advantage of this because soils in Canada are really poor. Well, we used to say that about Brazil as well. 10 years ago, we say, oh, we can't have agriculture in Brazil. Soils are too poor. They're too acidic and so on. But we currently have soy production in Brazil that rivals soy production in North America. So it remains to be seen what happens. So to summarize that, the temperature effects, there's an effect on enzyme kinetics, there's effect on in terms of longer growing season in colder regions, and it also contributes to increased water stress. An earlier speaker pointed out, in terms of Canada, there's actually not a lot of research specifically looking at how agriculture impacts crops in Canada. I mean, climate change impacts crops in Canada. Some of the studies are really old, 1980 or 99, or early 2000. But overall, these studies said that crops in Canada might benefit. I then reviewed the literature and what we know globally or maybe you know, down south about agriculture, how agriculture might be impacted by climate change. So this is a study that was it's more recent by David Lobel and colleagues from Stanford, where they looked globally on the impact of climate change that's already happened. So from 1980 to 2008, over a rough 30-year period, this is their prediction of how different crops might be affected globally. So negative values in red show decreases, and values in blue show increases, the climate impact over history. Essentially for maize, they predict that it's probably close to zero, okay? Not much impact in Canada. We don't really grow rice. Wheat seems to marginally benefit from climate change, while soy seems to be affected by climate change, according to this study. So this is a global study, so it should be taken with a grain of salt. Canada is just one of many countries they're looking at here. But there's another study published. This is looking at the United States, where they found potential nonlinear responses in terms of how crops might be impacted by climate change. This was just looking at the U.S., where they found that corn up to about 29 degrees Celsius. I'm sorry that this is shifted. Up to about 29 degrees Celsius, corn may marginally benefit from warming. But after 29 degrees Celsius, may have a threshold response where it yields decrease dramatically. Same thing with soybeans. They also looked at wheat. A dramatic decrease after 30 degrees Celsius in the case of soy. But another study that came out recently in Nature Climate Change just this year found that this threshold response may actually have been overestimated. So they suggested that farmers are not dumb. When these kinds of changes happen, they will adapt to changes. So they looked at how people in the U.S. have responded over time. So they looked cross-sectionally across the U.S. at what they call killing degree days. So as temperatures cross this kind of high threshold, they calculated something called killing degree days. How many high temperature days did you have over the year? And they looked at how crops have adjusted to that over time. So places in the southern U.S. Are witnessing higher killing degree days than places in the north. So the y-axis here shows the sensitivity of maize production in bushels per acre as a function of killing degree day, and the x-axis has the mean killing degree days. And they find that a logarithmic fit is a pretty good fit to this particular relationship. Essentially, places that are colder have fewer mean killing degree days, have higher sensitivity in terms of negative values compared to places that are warmer. So places that are warmer are maybe better adapted in terms of dealing with these changes. And so they looked at, this is their prediction of U.S. maize yield losses, and they, places in the north will be more strongly impacted by climate warming less strongly impacted by climate warming. They may actually benefit from climate warming, while places down south will have maybe a 50% decrease in yield. But then when you include adaptation, they find that some of these places, this shows the change with adaptation compared to without adaptation, and they found that places in the south with adaptation may actually have increases in yields compared to without adaptation. So the U.S. maize yield losses with adaptation was reduced from 14% to only 6% losses. So adaptation can offset some of the potential losses. One of my students did the same thing as part of her master's thesis, where these are two different climate models, and this is change in maize yields. All the red colors showed decreases in yields. And she just did a simulation where she allowed planting dates and harvest dates to change. So she essentially said that farmers will shift their planting and harvest dates as climate changes. And many places in Canada and many parts of Europe and northern China, yields actually went up with climate change. So adaptation can actually help, and places that are too cold now may actually benefit. So to summarize, CO2 is beneficial to crops. We may see increased water stress, especially in the West. But most likely, places that are too cold, like Canada, may actually benefit from climate change, unless we have potential nonlinear responses. But even then, maybe adaptation may mitigate the losses. So the story is kind of complex. We don't fully know what might happen in Canada. We have some research in the U.S. that indicates what might happen. The big other surprises are what will happen to other things that are affected by climate change. What will happen to pests? What will happen to weeds? How will they respond? We have very little idea so far. The other big thing that agriculture responds to, agriculture doesn't just respond to climate change, it mostly responds to markets. I'm not an economist. Economists have theories about how farmers respond to changing prices and so on. And we know that prices of crops have changed. We've had increasing, or prices have actually shot up since 2008 or so. We have some evidence. As a natural scientist, we usually try to look for empirical evidence and not just theories. If you look back at some data here, this shows deforestation rates in Brazil. The green color shows deforestation rates. The blue color here shows the price of livestock, and the red colors show price of soybeans. Okay, so Brazilian deforestation, this is for the last decade, shifted from more of a livestock production system to more of a soy production system more recently, and it's pretty clear that deforestation rates in the past were more correlated with livestock prices, while more recently deforestation rates seem to be correlated with soy prices. So obviously farmers are responding to changing prices and changing production systems. This is from another paper where they showed changes in harvested area for different crops over the last decade in blue and corn prices in red. So there seems to be a pretty good correlation between corn prices and changes in harvested area. So farmers do respond to markets. So one of the things I worry about in terms of how warming may affect Canada, I'm not really worried about agriculture in Canada per se, but you can imagine a potential feedback that sort of looks like this. With warming, we have potentially increases in cultivable land in Canada. Along with that, maybe we have increases in biofuel crop demand. So as climate warms, one of the things we do is to try to find solutions. And there are several studies that have now shown that the human response to climate change, potentially by growing more biofuel crops, might actually have be a bigger driver of land use change in the planet than direct human use of land. Okay. So canola has been going up. Canada is perfectly poised to take advantage of canola for biodiesel. Right? So maybe there will be increased demand for canola, and this may actually lead to maybe more potential forest clearing, which will maybe release carbon, potentially cause more warming. This is the kind of feedback that we should be worried about, which is that the human response may actually be greater, or in some ways, stupid human response may actually be worse than the direct impact of climate change on land use. This is all, pie in the sky. This is, I'm sorry, this is cut off. This is the Canola Council of Canada from their website. They have, in big bold letters, feedstocks of choice, why the world prefers biodiesel made from canola. And they list a whole bunch of reasons why it makes sense to support canola production in Canada. Proven technology, high oil content, superior flow in cold weather, which is very important for Canada. So in conclusion, I think climate change, I hope this is sort of a positive message, especially if you're focused in Canada. Climate change may actually be beneficial for agriculture in Canada. The human response may be the bigger surprise. And we should keep in mind that agriculture is not really for food in Canada. It's mainly for exports and for feed. And I would say that I'm less worried about agriculture itself and more worried about its environmental consequences. So it's not that I'm worried about food production in Canada, but more about what it might do to the environment. Thanks. Ask about phosphorus. yes, I mean, so going along with these things, I didn't have time to talk about it. We, in addition to applying water, we apply a whole bunch of nutrients to the land as well, nitrogen and phosphorus being important ones. People have forecasts that increased agricultural production would increase in demand for nitrogen. We are not less worried about nitrogen. The amount of global energy used for nitrogen production is about 2%. So we are not going to run out of energy for making nitrogen fertilizer. But phosphorus is a limited resource. We mine phosphorus, as Elena can tell you about. And so there is some worry that we may run out of phosphorus, but that's another story.
Question over here.
Yeah.
Could we return to that slide?
Conceptually, yeah.
It's the optimum temperature of crops. Is it safe to say, based on energy studies of ecosystems or even higher organisms, that the curve is steeper on the warm side? In other words, yeah. There's less room for error on the warm side than there is on the cold.
Yeah, yeah. Generally, that's true. Sure, yeah. Yeah, generally the curve is steeper on the warm side than on the colder side. So it's slightly steeper on the warm side, so it crashes more abruptly than it does. And the studies that looked at nonlinear responses, clearly show the yield response. This yield response is clearly nonlinear. So as things get warmer, yields maybe go up slightly over time, and then it crashes. Damon? Yes. I mean, depends on what we want to eat, yeah? If you're worried about rice consumption, maybe we should be worried. But, you know, wheat, we grow enough wheat domestically to feed ourselves. Depends on whether we're going to get our bananas from Costa Rica or not, yeah. Sorry. That's the question that, I mean, it's about the question of eutrophication, right? Is that what you mean?
Salinization?
I don't know if that's a big deal in Canada, is it?
Yeah.
In the West?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if soils are getting more saline, that's an... I mean, the bigger issue in the West is probably going to be climate variability as well. So here, maybe on the long run, on average, Canada's, you know, doing quite well in terms of water. But if you have certain years that are, you know, more drought prone than other years, then we may have an issue. It's a regional problem rather than a global, in a national problem. So in the Eastern Canada, maybe there's not an issue, but in Western Canada, it's likely going to be an issue.
Is it? When you talk about the adaptation of agriculture, is it based on more irrigation or development of new strains?
Yeah. It's all of those things. In these cases, the adaptation is based on, there are two different aspects of adaptation I talked about. The study that was done in the U.S. was essentially looking at the fact that we grow different cultivars in different places. So people in the West, southern U.S. grow a different crop, different variety compared to people in the northern U.S. So that's one form of adaptation. The second kind of adaptation I talked about is the fact that you can shift your planting and harvest dates as climate changes, along with the fact that you bring in new cultivars at the same time. There's, of course, irrigation. There's different levels of adaptation. One is just changing your farming practices. The other is new R&D. New infrastructure.
Yeah.